case will be taken under advisement. And we will go on to case number two, which is 04-1331, United States versus Martin L. Thompson. And Mr. Kraft, good morning.
Good morning.
Come on up.
May it please the court and counsel. I represent defendant appellant Martin Thompson. My name is Jacob Kraft. Methamphetamine is rapidly becoming to this new millennium what cocaine was in the 1980s. And like cocaine, methamphetamine manufacturer has several earmarks that police use when they are trying to detect the occurrence of this crime. Sometimes they use residue found in trash cans that they can test and see that, yes, methamphetamine manufacture was likely going on as a result of the finding of this residue. That is not what we have here. We do not have testable evidence. What we have is a child's squirt gun that was found still in the packaging that was designed to be used as a prize in a carnival that Mr. Thompson sometimes operated. We have what appears to be aluminum baking pans and the tops of aerosol cans located in the backyard of Mr. Thompson's rented property, as well as an aluminum propane canister located within Mr. Thompson's bus that he sometimes used as living quarters while operating his traveling amusement company. The police call this corroboration of a statement given to them by a man under the influence of methamphetamine with a grudge, with an axe to grind against Mr. Thompson, who had been out of the state for the 2 months prior to giving this statement to the police. Taking the statement that, yes, I made methamphetamine with Martin Thompson at some time in the past, without pinning that point down, saying that they did it at his house at some point in the past, unknown to the police, they go over to Mr. Thompson's property, which, as I stated, was rented. They got the permission of the property owner, Mr. Everson, to search the area surrounding Mr. Thompson's rental property, and then they walked down the property trespassing and observed the items aforementioned.
What is your understanding of from where the burn pile was visible?
The burn pile was located approximately 35 feet from the back of the trailer behind what has been described in several of the records as a berm. It's my understanding that this berm, according to the testimony of Mr. Thompson, was a 2 to 3 foot hill located approximately 35 feet behind the house. His testimony is that it would be impossible to see. Go ahead.
B-E-R-M. Behind the trailer.
Yes, ma'am.
Not the house, the trailer.
It's a trailer home.
Right.
Yes. So this berm, this small hill, was located behind the trailer home. And the burn pile was located right behind it. And he said that he used it as a fire pit in his testimony. And the officer stated in his affidavit for the search warrant that he observed 14 aerosol cans. But when pressed on that at the hearing held in the state court, he said, well, you know what, mainly it was the tops of cans, and there might have been one or two cans in there. Then he was asked, well, were there any identifying characteristics that showed that these were cans that were starter fluid, a product used in methamphetamine manufacture? He said, no, there was nothing to identify that from a spray can of any other kind. So this rather sparse evidence is used to corroborate stale information provided by an informant with an axe to grind. The U.S. will likely reply that these were statements against penal interest. That is not the case for a couple reasons. The first reason is that we have no idea when in time this prior manufacture with Mr. Thompson occurred.
Can you just help me with one thing? Why do you think he had a legitimate interest in or a legitimate expectation in the areas where the police viewed the evidence?
Okay. There's a couple different areas that the police viewed the evidence. Let's first look at the burn pile. Looking at the done factors, proximity is the first one. This was within 35 feet of the house.
Okay.
There have been cases that have held buildings farther than that.
Right.
Have an interest. Secondly, they looked to see if there was some type of an enclosure designed to protect the privacy of that area, and the berm here served that purpose. It prohibited anyone, a casual passerby, as is the fourth factor in Dunn, from being able to observe that. You'd have to go actually go beyond the berm pile to see this berm pile beyond.
That's why I asked you that question earlier, the vantage point.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
So somebody would have to walk to the backyard to observe this. And this isn't your casual salesman. This is somebody who would have to walk in the backyard to take a look at this. In addition, is the relatively innocuous nature of everything that was observed. Thompson testified that the aluminum, propane tank observed in the bus that he sometimes used as living quarters, which shouldn't even have to be analyzed under the curtilage standard, but rather a dwelling standard, it was aluminum. It can't be used with anhydrous ammonia. And the officer, in his training as a drug expert, should know that aluminum can't be used with anhydrous ammonia. That was not told to the magistrate. Nor was the fact that it was simply the can tops observed. Nor was that told to the magistrate. Nor was it told that the squirt guns were still in their packaging. Because of these omissions, the magistrate did not have all the information in front of him. That is why we're asking for suppression in this case, because it is not good faith. The magistrate did not have all the information, and the exclusionary rule is designed to prohibit this type of police hedging from the magistrate. If they go to the magistrate and they present all the evidence to him, and he makes a wrong decision regarding probable cause, good faith will let the officers find that. We'll let the officers use whatever evidence they find while acting under that warrant. However, when the police hedge and do not tell the magistrate everything, and the magistrate is not able to make an informed decision, that's exactly what the exclusionary rule is designed to prevent, curtail. Now, the U.S. will likely rejoin and say that the information provided by Miller was corroborated by these rather innocent observations at Thompson's property. The problem here is that the cases that they cite for corroboration were very specific in nature. They cite Brack. There, the informant predicted the future activities of a third party, precisely. They had a warrant conditioned on the defendant's return to a hotel at a certain date and time. He showed up. They conduct the arrest and search at that point. I've seen that I've entered my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rumbelow, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel, Rita Rumbelow for Appellee, United States of America. There are two issues in this case. First, whether the search warrant affidavit was supported by probable cause, and two, whether Thompson was entitled to a Franks hearing. Turning to the first issue of probable cause, we had very, very detailed information from a named informant. He made inculpatory statements, statements against interest, everything that led to a finding that he was credible. But the police officers didn't just stop there. They corroborated everything that the CI, that the informant told them by going to Mr. Thompson's home, which, again, the informant had described with particularity. And when they went to the house, they observed a trailer. According to the record, approximately 10 feet behind the trailer, there was a contour of a hill that rises up approximately 2.5 feet, and that's the berm. So you have the trailer, and approximately 10 feet from that, according to the record, is this berm, and it was to help stop water flowing into the trailer. Approximately 25 feet behind that, 35 feet from the residence, was this berm pile. And that is where the officers noticed the 14 aerosol cans that included both the cans and the tops. And the record also shows that Agent Peters, who was the affiant for the affidavit in support of the search warrant, had a ton of experience with methamphetamine cases, and he was familiar with the manufacturing of methamphetamine. So in addition to seeing these aerosol cans in the burn pile, which was not part of the curtilage of this house, he then looks at plain view. In a bus, he sees this big propane tank. And the record shows it wasn't a propane tank that we're all familiar with for our gas grills. This is a propane tank that's consistent with the forklift, which the informant said he had been stealing with Defendant Thompson. So although the informant didn't specifically say when they stole these propane tanks, when they were manufacturing meth, so arguably was the information stale? Again, that's why the police went to Thompson's house and corroborated everything. And then they saw the aluminum containers, the squirt guns, the aerosol cans in the burn pile, and the propane tank in plain view through a window of a bus in the driveway.
What about these discrepancies between the agent's testimony and what was in the affidavit that counsel discussed? The caps, and he mentioned a couple other things.
In the testimony was taken in state court.
Right.
And at the state court hearing, Investigator Sullivan testified that there were some cans and there were some tops. But again, the appellant did not bring these specific discrepancies to the attention of either the magistrate judge or the district court below, so he has waived that. He did not let the magistrate judge or the district court address those discrepancies, so he has waived that argument. But again, it is pretty clear in the district court, in the state court proceeding, that some of those discrepancies were explained. But I also note that whether or not these squirt guns were in their original packaging, that's only the defendant's self-serving statements at the state court proceeding anyway. So whether that's even true, who knows. But again, when you look at Agent Peters'
Could they have been described as children's squirt guns?
That's not how it's described in the search warrant affidavit. And again, we look to the four corners. But again, Agent Peters said he saw these two squirt guns that could be used in the manufacturing of methamphetamine. And again, you look at some innocuous items like a propane tank, aerosol cans, squirt guns, and aluminum containers, and to you or I, who's never manufactured meth or investigated, you know, on the streets and gone into meth labs, they may not add up to anything. But again, with Agent Peters' extensive experience in the manufacturing of methamphetamine, and again, coupled with what the informant has told him. And remember, that's not all that we know. In the search warrant affidavit, you have the chief of police who told Agent Peters that he actually saw then our informant, after this interview, possess a propane tank on April 30th. And this informant, also his wife, also had methamphetamine at the house and needles and some torn apart batteries. So, again, looking at the totality, clearly there was sufficient probable cause for the search warrant affidavit. Turning then to the Franks issue, whether Thompson was entitled to a Franks hearing, again, the record was...
Would we call what he had in state court a full Franks hearing?
After reviewing the record, I would say yes, because as the magistrate judge noted, Thompson never asked for a Franks hearing in his initial brief. Then the government submitted its brief, and then its reply brief for the very first time, Thompson all of a sudden asked for a Franks hearing. But again, we review this for clear error, and the magistrate judge said nothing that Thompson offered would add anything to the state court proceeding. And again, the omissions that he complains about, none of them were material, and again, the record was fully developed in state court. So unless the court has any questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment and conviction order of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Rumbelow. Mr. Kraft, how much time? 3 minutes.
To answer the court's question, I would ask, could any squirt gun be described as an adult squirt gun? By nature, they're a children's toy.
Well...
Beside the
all
fact.
Right. That's debatable.
All right.
Then I wish to be invited to Your Honor's next picnic. Now, the fact of the matter is that, yes, the investigator does have a great deal of experience in investigating drug cases. That's a double-edged sword. When he comes to the magistrate and he says, Your Honor, I have all this experience in detecting methamphetamine cases, and I've seen these things, and I think they're being used to make meth. It is very easy for the magistrate to rely on that expertise. The problem then becomes when that expertise is abused, when omissions are made from the affidavit, and when the magistrate isn't presented with the full information. The fact of the matter is that you could walk into nearly any garage in the United States, see these items, and have probable cause then to search that individual's house for the potential manufacture of methamphetamine. Because of that, and the nature of methamphetamine is very insidious. We understand that. It's a terrible crime, but the Fourth Amendment is designed to protect from these unreasonable intrusions into privacy. We need more than a guy who's been out of the state for 2 months prior to talking to the police, having an axe to grind with Thompson, being under the influence of methamphetamine at the time, not providing any specific information regarding the manufacturing methods used, when they manufactured methamphetamine. Any of these questions could have been asked to him by the police at that time. They weren't. Instead, they go over, observe a bread pan, a squirt gun, a propane tank, an aerosol can top. They say, well, you know what? This can top is consistent with a starter fluid can. Well, it probably is. It's also consistent with a...
My understanding from the government brief is that Mr. Miller specifically described the location, the amount, the frequency, the method even of the manufacture of the meth.
There are several different operations by which methamphetamine can be manufactured. Several different recipes, if you would, could be followed. He did describe the frequency and amount that was manufactured, but not a particular method. And any chemicals that would be required for it other than anhydrous.
And, of course, you don't have any case that is on point with our facts here where we've got, quote, stale evidence but specific evidence coupled with a walk around the property.
I'm afraid.
You know, either one of those, if we only had one or the other, then I think you'd be in great shape. But it's the combination of the two that makes it difficult for you.
I don't have
a case that really is analogous.
The nature of search and seizure law is very fact-specific, unfortunately.
I understand, but I mean, you don't have a case that's close to ours.
I do not have one off the top of my head.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. So, thank you, Mr. Kraft, Ms. Rumbelow, and the case will be taken under advisement. And we're going to go on to case number 3.